Hello and welcome back to the first episode of TWAR of 2020, this decade.
Season 2, Pete.
Listen to where we're doing seasons, but
Oh, well, might as well.
Yeah, I'm Emma.
I'm Isaac.
And I am the lovable dumpster fire, Jaden.
Yeah. Who is always on the phone these days.
Oh, something that's going
to... No, you don't understand. I am the phone.
He has become one with the phone. The simulacrum is complete.
Not sure I want him on this phone call anymore. He might hack into my phone.
What have you got to hide?
Yeah. See, here, let's open up this application. Emma, how could you?
I think he went onto my Reddit. Alright, well... You would have gathered from the title, but today, so we're Australian, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, for 3 months, Australia was on fire. Like, literal fire.
And it kind of still is. It's not exactly over, per se. It's still
A lot of the major ones have been contained, but, yeah.
So, there's still a lot of, like, relief work that needs support and stuff.
The problem is that there's so many fires and they're so big that can't really contain all of them.
No.
I like put them all out, so they have to kind of just watch them.
Yeah, there's been a couple of times where the like fire chief, like the CFS and all that, like the top guys have just said, look, we just got to let it burn because we just can't. It's too dangerous and it's not going to. It's going to be like it's going to be kind of pointless, basically, make things harder in the long run. So, that's what they did for most of Kangaroo Island is just push everything back as much as they could and hold it off. But in the end, they're just like, no, we're just going to let it burn.
Luckily, that's been contained now.
Yeah.
Even though about half of Kangaroo Island's now burnt, including the massive resort there.
Not really fun fact, but interesting fact. Majority of the fire currently in Kangaroo Island is currently underground.
Yeah, I read about that, and it just didn't make sense to me how that would work. But
it's only like a couple of centimeters.
Yeah, it was
like underground, but.
Okay.
Yeah, my stepdad, who is science fires, not going to indulge his name because, you know, business stuff and whatnot.
Yeah, no, we know.
Pretty much went to Kangaroo Island, like, last week.
I don't know about you guys, but I didn't actually hear about the fires till like the end of December, even though they'd been going since about October.
Yeah, no, I heard about them pretty much as soon as they started. It's something that I've just known it's pretty much like about 2 weeks after they started.
It was kind of in the back of my mind. I knew that there was some bushfires, but I didn't know the full extent of them until like literally New Year's Eve, actually.
That's when they really started to pick up.
Yeah, because I was at a New Year's Eve party and they broadcasted the fireworks on the news, and literally as soon as the fireworks ended, they started talking about the bushfires, and everyone at the party's like, oh. Yeah, this is putting a bit of a damper on our New Year's fun times.
Yeah, no, I sort of got a huge grasp of the full extent of it in about November, because that's when, the smoke from the Adelaide Hills and stuff like that was just...
The aircon just kicked in.
was starting to, affect, people I knew. Like, not the actual fire itself, but the smoke. You know, like, my stepdad had asthma and it was really starting to affect him at that time. It was reaching one of my friends in Aldinga. He was saying one time he got home from work, he was just like, the smoke, man, the smoke. It's horrible out there. And I'm just like... Oh.
In the Adelaide Hills fire, my dad and stepmom actually had to evacuate from the home because the fire was pretty close. It's in Lenswood or Wobbeford, one of those two.
Yeah, it was just
but, I had to evacuate. Yeah. Luckily, they're all safe.
Well, that's good. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was even someone I know that's my age, he volunteers for the firefighters, and he went down to Kangaroo Island.
Yeah, my uncle
twice. No. He went down to Kangaroo Island once. He just got back last week, and before that, He was in New South Wales or Victoria, one of them.
Probably New South Wales.
Yeah, I think it was New South Wales.
My uncle got sent over to Kangaroo Island because he's like, I don't know what they call it, but basically his job is to disconnect like power lines and reconnect them as well. He has to like do the okay order. So he got sent over there. He's back now, but now that the fires are sort of not stopped, but like died a fair chunk down, he'll probably have to go back there and undo whatever it is he's been asked to do or whatever. So
these fires are pretty bad. There was a few firefighters that didn't make it. I think most recently was yesterday.
32 deaths, I think.
Yeah, like yesterday, I think there was three because of something happened to the plane.
Plane crash.
Yeah, and I think
American firefighters unfortunately lost their lives.
Yeah, I think it was the water bomber.
Yeah, it would have been.
Like, these fires are so bad that the water bomber planes were literally going and getting water from people's pools, like taking it directly from their pool.
Yeah. But, see, the sad thing is, this one's done probably the most damage in regards to wildlife and stuff, but in regards to actually deaths, as it stands, it's actually not even the second worst.
Yeah, a lot of koalas, especially because Kangaroo Island's known for their koala population. And
funny enough, not kangaroos.
Fairy
penguins.
Yeah, so I think it was, now koalas have been, I think they're endangered. Like, they're class.
Before all this started.
Well, Robert Irwin came out and said something about how now they're like,
they're worse now because of the fires. They were classed as endangered, but they were actually kind of on the brink of it before.
Yeah, they were on the brink, but I don't think they were officially classed as it, and now they are.
They are, yeah.
Because part of that reason is of the chlamydia epidemic going through the koala population.
Do you want to explain that, Jaden, to our listeners?
Pretty much. If do not have a koala pee on you, otherwise you get chlamydia.
Hmm, yeah. Koalas of chlamydia, there you go.
I did not know that.
Alliteration?
I was told that it was because of just, like, all the trees that have been cut down.
And also, koalas are incredibly stupid.
They are. They're so dumb.
Eucalyptus leaves have no nutritional value, that's why they have to eat so much.
They're
poisonous as well.
Yeah, they are. They actually kind of give them a bit of a high more than anything else. That's why they sleep all the time, because they're actually just stoned.
So yeah, fun facts about koalas. Can I just say, one of the heroes of these fires, though, have been the wombats.
Yeah.
The wombats, like, they, I don't know how prevalent wombats are in other countries, but we have wombats here, and they have burrows.
Well, wombats are native to Australia.
Yeah, but I don't know how much other people know about wombats.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So wombats have burrows, and what they were doing is they were letting other animals come into their burrows. In fact, they were going out of their way to go get other animals that were injured in that and bringing them into their burrows.
That just sounds like such an Australian thing to do.
Honestly, like, this is an Australian animal.
Yeah, it is. It really is. That's incredible.
Yeah, so wombats were heroes. It was pretty cool. So I guess we should talk about what kind of kicked all this off. A lot of it is arsonists.
Yeah, there's been this like really weird mix of things, but
it was like the perfect storm.
It was. It was the perfect storm of just, arson, council and
dry state. Lightning.
Yeah, like dry lightning was a massive start for a lot of them.
Yeah, because I know when the rain did come, a few more fires started because of lightning.
Exactly, yeah. Because what sort of happened was, councils and state governments, they notice a huge difference in, normally what we would do is either the council would do it or farmers with, like, not certifications, but trained farmers would do like land clearing and stuff, like they'd burn a lot of all the dead like leaves and branches and whatever, so that if a bushfire does start, it hasn't really got anything to continue. Unfortunately, because of the heat waves we were having at the time, normally we would actually be seeing this sort of stuff like in February, March, not like September.
Yeah, like the Bengal bushfires were in January.
Yeah, so like
they started on Mum's birthday.
Yeah. So we've had a fire ban longer than we were supposed to normally. It was just too unsafe to do any fire clearing.
Something I found interesting, though, that my mum told me is that I think it was some Aboriginals did their back burning.
Mm.
And when the fires came through, guess which was the only spot in that area not affected?
The ones that backburned.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandmother was telling me a story about a person who did it. They got like a $900 fine or something from the council, but their house is still standing, so...
Yeah, see, arsonists, like, I think there's something like over 100 they're saying now. Mm-hmm. Arsonists started these fires, but they were able to continue because of lack of backburning.
Exactly, yeah.
Because it gave fuel for the fire.
Yeah, and a lot of people were blaming, like, the federal government, especially the Greens Party.
However,
that's incorrect.
If people actually did their research, they would see that it's actually nothing to do with the Greens whatsoever.
Yeah, they actually, even if they did have a stance on it, which they do have an official stance and they're actually all for it if you do your research, as Jaden said, Their official stance is like, you got to do it because it stops this sort of thing from happening, and it's better for the environment in the long run. But even if they did have a stance on it, they're not actually like a leading party, so their word is not law. You could still go against that party. It's got, they have no say in it anyway, so you can't.
It's really pretty much a bunch of bad luck.
It is. It was just a combination of just so many bad things.
And also, I think part of the reason there was no backburning is because in one of the areas, it was something to do with birds, and they didn't want to backburn because it would kill the baby birds.
Well, that could be it. Although
another, I think that was an activist thing. They didn't want any backburning in this particular area because of the baby birds.
That could be
the baby birds are all dead now.
Yeah, well, that's
it. I'm sorry for putting it so bluntly, but the baby birds are dead now because you didn't backburn. Yeah,
but were they fire birds by any chance?
I'm not sure what sort of birds they were.
Because, okay, so another sort of story, not anymore, but a long time ago, what the Indigenous Australians used to do is they would actually, do small fires in the forest to get, as part of their hunting. Mm. So we get the animals to, get out the forest, and then they kind of just hunt them as they running away. Anyway, there's a type of bird called a firebird. So what they do is one group of, a particular group of Indigenous Australians, they would, start small fires. Firebirds would pick up, the small amber, and they would be the ones starting the fires.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, those birds are in some areas
I'm not sure, but I know that, there was a particular spot where no backburning happened because I think activists wanted to protect the baby birds.
Yeah.
An interesting thing to note that is that Australia's plants and, flora and all of that, majority of them do require fire to...
That's true. Exactly. My mum told me about how when she was in high school, she learnt that there are seeds in the forest that require extreme heat to grow.
That's,
and the forests and all that, they're already growing back.
Yeah, exactly. Our fauna is designed to
withstand
this sort of stuff.
There's been fire, in Australia for as long as it's existed.
Yeah, there was apparently a fire in the 1920s that was, way worse than this one.
Yeah, the one in 2009 was worse than this one. There was another one that was in the... there's been so many, starting in the 1920s and just...
Yeah, so it's not necessarily about the forests and all that being destroyed because they're not. It's more about people's homes and all that.
Yeah, and just the rebuild of that. And even though our plants and stuff are designed for bushfires, some of our animals
aren't. Like the koalas who live only to get stoned.
Yeah. Just some of the photos though in those articles.
Yeah, they're pretty sad.
It was horrific.
Yeah. But luckily we have people like the Irwins. Steve Irwin may be gone, but his legacy lives on in his kids, aka Robert. Robert is awesome and a mini Steve. Literally they look exactly the same.
They do, actually.
And I think Australia Zoo's taken on about 200,000 injured animals.
Yeah, there's been a lot of petitions going out. Well, not petitions as such, but like programs where if you can adopt like a family of koalas, you know, if you're living on a property, you can.
One of our friends has actually adopted a koala. Like she obviously doesn't have it, but it's like sponsoring the koala.
Oh no, I mean like legit. They adopt a koala. Like, like if you have a 10-acre property, trees and stuff, you know, you can. Yeah, so it's kind of good. There's been a lot of, you know, RSPCA. They've been doing a lot of good stuff.
Australia Zoo.
Yeah, Australia Zoo. The WWF. They've been looking into koala crisis. There's also been a group that focus a lot on looking after domestic animals as well. So, like, you know, people's sheep, horses, cows, dogs, cats.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of farm animals died as well.
Yeah, because a lot of them would have got trapped.
Yeah, I know there was, like, been photos of a farmer having to go shoot his horses and all that.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of sheep sad. Just black. Like, just completely. Yeah.
It's very sad, and we give our moral and mental support to all of the Australians who have lost something because of these bushfires.
And even, you know, people that live overseas and have got families here as well, like, you know, hope they've checked in on them and hope that they are okay, and sorry if they're not.
Like, how even New Zealand was getting the smoke.
Yeah.
It would be affecting them.
Yeah, it does, and that's the thing. You know, these sorts of things don't just affect the countries involved; they affect everyone in one way or another.
Yep. So, yeah, that was just a random moment of silence for those affected. Anything to add?
Not really.
So, I guess what we should talk about now is how you can. Well, obviously, not all of our listeners are Australian, but even those in, say, the US and all that have had pretty devastating wildfires, like California and all that. So, we're going to give some hints, well, not hints, more like tips on how to protect yourself from the bushfires and wildfires and all that. So these can kind of be implemented by everyone.
Yeah, we'll probably do that. So these are all these things are like CFS certified. They're not like stuff we've made up or whatever. It's from like the CFS. You know, you can go on their website and you can load up like these fact sheets and survival plans.
Yeah, and have your 5-minute bushfire plan. I'm sorry, that's an ad on TV and on the radio, so you're always hearing about, make sure you have your 5-minute bushfire plan.
And that's all it takes, though. Like, 5 minutes could save your entire life. Like, it's just so important to, at the very least.
Also, please don't try and be a hero, because I know people in Kangaroo Island specifically were staying back and trying to defend their property with hoses. Like, just, I understand it's your property, but
lots of memories and all of that.
But your life's more important.
Okay, I won't bring up the fact that there is fact sheets on how to protect your home.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that there's particular scenarios where you probably can, But if, like, a wall of fire is coming towards you...
Yeah, leave it to the professionals.
Yes. If you can... If it's just, like, a small, smaller sort of fire, then, like, maybe. But just take into account your individual circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't... If you honestly... If there's doubt... If there's a reasonable doubt in your mind, then just go. Like,
yeah.
Just, even if it's the smallest, it's not worth it.
All right. Do you want to read off your little fact sheets?
I've got a few, so which one do you want to start
with? Well, we'll start with staying and defending, because okay. We were just talking about that.
Okay. So, obviously, you know, as we said, if you don't feel like you're equipped to stay and defend, or you don't think you should, or it's too risky, you know, the CFS do recommend, above all else, to just leave. But if you feel like you really do need to, okay, so I'll just go through the situations that the CFS say you should not stay and defend. If it is a catastrophic. Thanks, Lord. Thank you. Fire danger rating day. So
pretty much what the bushfires have been like here. Yeah, exactly.
If it is an extreme fire danger day and your home has not been specifically designed, constructed, or modified to withstand the fire.
So such as, say you have leaves in your gutter.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Wood around the property.
Even just like wooden frames.
Yeah, wooden frames, like that. All that sort of stuff.
If your property is not well prepared and defendable, so that's the...
Yeah, have wood around it. Yeah. Leaves,
junkyard, like
if, yeah, you if there's cars and a stuff, lot of stuff that can burn.
Yeah, don't do it. This is probably a big one that a lot of people don't really consider at the time of these sorts of fires. It's something that personally I probably wouldn't, but it's something you probably should. If you're not feeling emotionally prepared or physically fit.
Yeah. That's true.
Like, if you've got, like, a broken arm or something, don't.
No.
Like, just don't. Like, just, and if you feel like it's something that you just can't withstand, yeah, just.
Emotionally, then don't. You need to be prepared to see your property burn.
And some other horrible things.
Yes.
Okay, so leaving early is obviously the safest option, but stay and defend. Make sure you have a bushfire survival plan, even if you are planning on
staying. Have your 5-minute bushfire plan.
That's the one. Like, make sure you do have one, even if your plan is to stay in whatever. Make sure you do know. So, like, what triggers are also put in place, like, and what you do to, like, in action. So, like, if, say, there's something in particular you're worried might set on fire, what have you, make sure you've done things to prevent that on top of it. Like, just early prevention measures, basically. Like, there are
like taking leaves out of your gutter.
Yes, or like filling up the bathtub before you go.
I'm only saying that because there was an ad on TV when we were kids and it would say how to protect your property from fires, and one of the main ones was cleaning out your gutter.
Yeah. So make sure the property is well prepared and maintained. So, like, if you've got water tanks and stuff, make sure that they're kind of full. Or if you are using mains, make sure, like, all your taps are working, like, every now and then and stuff like that. Also kind of have a plan, not just during the fire, but also, like, after. So, like, if you do manage to fight it off, kind of have a bit of an idea of, like, okay, what next? Because, you know, you might have stopped it that day, but they can always flare up and come from a different direction and stuff like that. So make sure that, you know, you have that
prepared for anything.
Know whether or not you have well-maintained firefighting equipment. And also, does everyone planning to stay and defend know how to use it? So if you've got a family and stuff like that.
Also, I think something worth mentioning is making sure if you have fire extinguishers, they're in date.
Yes. Yeah.
Because a lot of people would forget that sort of thing.
Yes, just check them, like, just, you know, whenever you walk past it.
Yeah, so that's another one of the early prevention things, making sure it's in date.
Yeah.
Because there's no point you're staying and defending against a bushfire, getting your fire extinguisher, only to realise it expired 2 years ago.
Yeah, or that it's broken. Or like,
yeah.
Just, you don't have the equipment. But yeah, like, if you do have a family, you know, make sure that they do know how to use some of the stuff as well, because yeah, anything could happen. They
and might see it before. I think it probably goes without saying, but if you have kids, don't stay and defend.
Yeah, or at the very minimum, you know, send, like, yeah, your partner to go yeah out if you, like, really feel the need to
I stay. Think if you have, like, kids or there are elderly people that you might be looking after,
yeah,
then just their safety probably comes it before the property.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, don't expect them to...
Like, the fire yeah, so just mainly there. People at risk, like people yeah with disabilities and
yeah
that sort of stuff.
And well, if you think the opposite, that they should help, then, yeah, you're not right in the mind, I have to say.
Yeah, just don't... Because, like we said earlier, consider the emotional...
Yeah, don't get impacts. 5-year-old Jimmy standing there with the hose.
Yeah, because that's just not gonna...
Yeah.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jaden.
Also consider stuff like your power going out.
Yeah.
And how that might affect certain things around the property or wherever you're defending, because that is a common thing to happen.
Also, I'm not too sure about this one, but would it be like, make sure your gas is switched off?
Yeah, if you're able to do that, that would probably come
especially,
under the early prep stuff.
Especially if you have, like...
Cylinders. Well,
yeah, if you have, like, gas cylinders, or we have our water heater's gas.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess making sure all that's, like, switched off, and I guess getting gas cylinders out of there.
Yeah.
And being careful of, like, aerosols and...
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly honest, if you do have gas cylinders, you're going to be fighting a very uphill battle because you're not going to be able to move them. That's super
yeah heavy. So in that case, you probably...
Yeah.
Best to leave.
Also, see if you have, like, access to water for firefighting, you know, like, is there a bit of a dam on your property, like, water tanks, as I mentioned earlier, even a pool.
Yeah.
Even though it's got the chlorine and stuff, it can still kind of help a bit. Just be careful when using pool water, because I'm pretty sure, like, when pool water with chlorine evaporates, it can be toxic.
Yeah, like, because it doesn't just have chlorine, it has a lot of other chemicals.
Yeah.
As well.
If you have any sprinklers, it's best to turn them on.
Yeah, that's yeah another thing. And even if you, and I guess that should also be something in your fire plan if you are planning on leaving, because every small bit helps.
Mm-hmm.
Like the CFS do in one of the other ones, even when you're leaving, do say something you can do is, like, fill up the bathtub before you leave.
Yeah.
Just don't stay in it. That's not what it's for. It's for when the firefighters rock up, they have some sort of water
yeah
that they can use on top of what they already have. See if you do have appropriate protective clothing. You know, don't go fighting fires in shorts and a t-shirt. You know, if you got like, I don't think jeans are super flammable, but I could be wrong.
Not sure.
That's something that it's kind of more up to your personal responsibility if you do know. You
could probably even wear, like, a wetsuit.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm not a professional.
Oh, no. Plastic.
Check your clothes and see if they're flammable.
Yeah, you can always check.
Yeah. And remember, in the worst case scenario, stop, drop, and roll.
And roll some more, and roll some more, and roll some more.
Yeah, and just roll out of there completely. Check if you do have an emergency survival kit, because, say, you aren't successful in saving your home, you could be stuck where you are for a while. So make sure you do have... This sort of links back to the have the aftermath.
Yeah, so like first aid kits. You can also get, like, those backpacks with food and all that in them.
Yeah, make sure you got stuff.
I used to
like
have
that
one. Yeah. I don't anymore. I probably should.
And then again, you know, do you have a backup plan? Like, if you are unsuccessful in saving your property, you know, have you got a plan in place for that? Make sure you do.
Yeah.
And one thing they kind of do sort of talk about a little bit is don't always 100% count on a fire truck rocking up. They're super busy.
Yeah, they're busy, especially with all the bushfires.
Yeah, so it's great if they do manage to get to you, and I'm sure they will try their hardest, but, like, it is something we should keep in the back of your mind, that it is possible that that's something that might not
happen. They're not going to reach you in time.
Yeah, so just make sure you factor that in. And like they say at the very end, if there's any doubt in your mind, you should leave early.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three steps to the actual setup to defending yourself. So before the fire arrives at your home, you need to be actively defending your property. So the protective clothing. Turn on the radio to keep yourself informed.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Bring pets inside to keep them and keep them in one room. So if you bring them inside, make sure they're in.
Yeah, so that way, I guess in the case you do have to emergency evacuate, you know where your pets are.
Yeah, exactly. And as possible, yeah. Close all windows and doors. Block spaces beneath doors and windows with wet towels. So stop smoke and stuff like that. Fill buckets, sinks, bathtubs with like anything that collects water. Just fill it up so that it's like ready to put out spot fires. Have your firefighting equipment like pumps and hoses connected to like your taps, water supplies, whatever you got. Block down pipes and fill gutters with water if you can as well. Remove all items which can burn from around your home, like outdoor furniture. So, maybe inside or just get out of the way of danger. Bring ladders inside to check the roof for like ambers. So, what a lot of people don't really consider that often is
the roof.
Yeah, just embers
in general. Just the embers.
Like, you know, that small, the small sparks that kind of just fly around.
Yeah.
They can go anywhere.
That's how a lot of spot fires start.
Exactly, yeah. Patrol the outside of your home, putting out any embers or spot fires. Just before the fire arrives, wet down timber decks and gardens close to the house. And then move any firefighting equipment to a place that you will not burn.
Yeah.
Okay. So next is when the fire actually arrives. Go inside, stay alert. Shelter in a room on the opposite side of the house from the approaching fire, and one that has a clear exit as well.
Yeah.
Isn't
like the bathroom meant to be one of the safer places? I know it is for certain natural disasters, but I'm not sure if it is with fires.
I guess it would depend on and you'd know yourself, but basically I'd imagine it would depend on how your house is laid out.
Yeah.
Basically, what this is more or less saying is possibly, but the main things you need to consider is if you have an ease access to get out if you need to, and then also, like, it's got to be the furthest end.
Yeah.
To where the fire is. Those are the two priority things, whichever room it is, so don't feel is super relevant.
Oh, I just know with some natural disasters, earthquakes and all that, it's like the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because it's like one of the sturdier rooms in the house, generally.
Yeah, because usually it's like tiles.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And
It would definitely have like the least amount of flammable stuff.
And like bathtubs can withstand like earthquakes and pipes and stuff like that. So protect yourself from the heat of the fire. And if you do feel you're at risk, call 000, then maybe they get to you. So once the fire's passed, just kinda, and it's been a couple of hours, just patrol your property, just look around, just make sure there are no spot fires starting up, or like any embers, whether it's on the roof, on the decking, just do a sweep over if you plan on staying in the building. And those are the CFS three steps. But again, They do above. If, yeah, if you can leave, do leave. That.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can leave, you probably should.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always the safest option.
Yeah.
Have any other helpful tips for us?
Honestly, if you think it's too late, it already is.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Because, like I said, a lot of this defending stuff is actually a huge chunk of it is before the actual fires get to you.
Yeah.
You know, this is early prep stuff.
Being prepared.
Yeah, so when it is bushfire season and you do feel like you're at risk and it hasn't got to you yet, I would recommend, above all else, whether you are planning on staying or going, make sure you're informed. So, like, check the CFS websites. They do have, like, a live feed of where the fires are quite often. You know, check your news sources, check the radio, just keep informed. That's the most, that's the biggest thing you can do with this sort of stuff, is keep informed.
Especially since we don't want any of our lovely listeners to be harmed whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just anyone in general.
Well, that's exactly
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Do we want to go through some do's and don'ts?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So these are just some do's and don'ts. Now some of these can actually result in fines as well. These are mainly related to fire danger season and total fire ban days.
Obviously these are more relevant to Australia.
Yeah, but I'd imagine
they would count in other places as well, but they might not necessarily result in fines, yeah, depending on the laws.
Exactly, but it's always something that you should probably factor in, even if
yes.
You know, make sure you do these sorts of things.
Definitely.
So, do restrictions apply to me if I live in a city or a built-up area? So, fire danger season and total ban, yes to both of those. Just because you're in the city doesn't mean you're not at risk to bushfires and stuff like that. Can I light a fire or burn off on my property? On both of those is no. Unless you have... So for fire danger season, if you have a Schedule 9 permit with your local council, so that's something you'd have to make sure. That's probably what a lot of you farmers probably do have, but I guess make sure it's up to date and stuff like that. Make sure you understand what it is.
When in doubt, check.
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't hurt to check with these sorts of things, but on total fire ban days, that is not permitted at all, regardless.
Well, pretty much anything about, can I light fires on a total fire ban?
Yeah, it's just flat out no.
It's just no.
Yeah.
It's kind of in the name. Honestly.
Yeah, so same with like burning off rubbish and grass clippings. Again, fire danger season, make sure you got the permits. And that's just checking with your local council and stuff like that.
Interesting. Another interesting one is fire danger season. You can use the barbecue, but if it's on a total fire ban day, you can't use your barbecue.
Yeah. I didn't actually know.
Neither
that,
did
so
I.
That is good information.
Yeah,
that's
actually really good information because I have barbecues a lot.
Yeah.
Barbecues are like an Aussie staple. Yeah. You Americans don't know what you're missing out on. they do barbecues in America, but they're not Aussie barbecues.
They do it okay, but not at all.
Yeah.
We Aussies do them.
Well, I can actually elaborate more on what Jaden said. So, can you use your gas or electric barbecue? So, fire danger season. You can, but providing the barbecue is clear of all flammable materials, that's on season, not total.
Okay.
It's like flammable materials within a distance of 4 meters. A person who is able to control the fire is present and on site of the fire until it's extinguished, and an appropriate extinguisher is on hand.
So basically during summer, someone needs to stand there with a hose.
Yeah, pretty much. Just like someone needs to be like ready to go and make sure, like, just alert, basically.
I can guarantee we definitely do not do that.
Yeah.
But we should.
So during fire danger season. There's no fires in the forest reserve. That includes barbecues and camp fires. Gas barbecues may be permitted under certain conditions. So, like, if you're out camping on forest reserves, you probably have to talk to, I don't think we call them rangers, but whatever the equivalent is.
They're rangers.
They are rangers? I don't know. I have no idea. But the people that are in charge of their area, they will discuss that with you.
Yeah, they're rangers.
Or whatever that is. Same applies to, the national park reserves as well.
Yep.
So you can't use kettle barbecues or solid fuel barbecues on sort of fireman days. But in regards to fire danger season, you can use them, but basically with the same rules as a gas barbecue. I didn't even think of this sort of thing. Pizza ovens, same thing applies, and also if it's electric, make sure electrician has had a good look at it, make sure it's all good. It was just something I was wondering. So my uncle's job is he cuts down trees for the council, off of electrical lines and all stuff like that. And during the heat wave, he was still doing his job with chainsaws and stuff. And I was kind of thinking, are you allowed to do that? But apparently you are during both seasons and band-aids.
Oh, okay.
But for band-aids, it's providing that you have 4 meter clear space around the activity, or a shovel or rake and portable water spray are on hand. Additionally, all engine exhaust exits through the exhaust system and a system that prevents the escape of interior heated parts of the system are prevented from coming into contact with flammable material, and the system is in good working order. So just basically make sure everything's working.
And to add on that, as well as on Total Fire, that days you can't actually use farming equipment. So tractors.
That does make sense.
Yeah. What's interesting is that in particular is not on here though, but it does make sense. I'm just curious that the fact that it's not on here. On fireman days, no, don't use angle grinders. I think it needs to be, cutting anything outside. Campfire and bonfires on Turtle Fan fireman days. You need a Schedule 10 permit to be allowed to do that from your local council. You can't use fireworks on either fire danger season or fireman days.
Yeah. Oh, they do with New Year's, but that's it.
Well, that's private use of fireworks, so that's probably different. They probably have
permits
and licenses.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. And you can smoke, but just kind of you can be looking at fines depending on where you throw
in,
your butt.
In saying that, you can smoke, but you probably shouldn't.
No, we don't condone smoking in general, but if you're
if you really have to.
Yeah, you're permitted to, but just put your butts in the appropriate place, because there will be fines that apply.
Bins exist for a reason.
Yeah.
But make sure it's put out first.
Yeah, that's what I meant by checking your butts.
Yeah. So, should we talk about now where you can donate?
There's a few different organisations.
I don't recommend going with the Red Cross.
Yeah.
Mainly because, there's been a little bit of drama with the Red Cross, because they raised $115 million and 30 of that went to directly to bushfires, but $90 million of that's been put away in a separate fund. It was reported that it was for use for other disasters, but it's actually going to be released over 3 years for bushfire relief and rebuilding and all that for this bushfire, and it's That's a bit shady.
It is. So, like, yeah, that is probably what they're doing now that people have drawn attention to it and they're planning them.
So, recommend not Red Cross because people need the money now, not in 3 years.
Yeah. And one thing with donating that I should probably stress, and it has kind of happened to a few people, unfortunately, and it's quite horrible to think that in a situation like this that people will do things like this. Check the website. If you don't want to do it to a GoFundMe or a Facebook, don't, because there have been cases of people just basically frauding. Like, they say that they're going to give the money to these groups, but they just don't for whatever reason.
You're better off donating directly to the source. Like, Salvos is good. They're better than Red Cross.
Well, they've had two cases, but I guess it's not so much their fault. They have had two cases of individuals stealing.
Oh, that's not the organisation as a whole. The Red Cross is the organisation as a whole.
Yeah. But yeah, just check, like, if it's got a .gov at the end of it, the way websites work is only, and it does get checked, and I could explain it, but I'll probably be here for like 2 hours. Basically, if it's got .gov on the end, it's extremely unlikely that it's anything but what the website says. So if it's cfs.gov, it's definitely CFS. If it's rfs.gov, it's definitely RFS. So those types of places are safe.
Yeah. So you can donate directly to CFS, can't you?
Yes,
that's you can. That would be the best way to go.
We'll probably chuck a couple of links.
Yeah, I'll put some links on our Twitter, and I'll also chuck some links in the description of this podcast. So check them out.
And if you'd rather donate to animal groups like WWF,
they're good.
Work. RSPCA, they're doing
the good RSPCA work. Is good.
I'll see if I can find and put up on the description that group that I talked about earlier that focus on the domestic animals as well, if you feel like they need help. But if you want to have good faith with people on Facebook, fine, but we strongly recommend just donating straight
to the source. Yeah.
To make sure ourselves,
we've donated. I donated some money personally, and as a group we did donate.
Yeah, we've done a couple of donations. I've done a fair bit of money.
Yeah.
To various organizations. So I think we donated to Salvation Army. Because I think it's important to focus on the aftermath.
Yeah.
At this point.
And also, all the links that we put up in our description will be reputable sources, which we will, like, look into ourselves, make sure they're legit.
Yeah.
So you can trust us.
Yeah, because I did have a few earlier that got closed down for strange reasons, so I had to double check and triple check, and I'll do a fourth check as well.
Yeah.
To make sure that they're still up and they're correct.
So, yeah.
Parents, while we want to be a reliable source of information to help inform everyone.
Yeah, and we also want to make sure that if you are feeling charitable, that it is going to the right place.
Yeah.
We don't want anyone ripped off, because it's just, especially in a situation like this, it's just horrible
that people would.
And we don't want your money being wasted.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we think that it's easier for, like, just you guys to go straight to the source as opposed to us doing, like, a GoFundMe or a Patreon or whatever. You know, that just seems unnecessary. We don't need to be middlemen for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I guess that brings us to the end. We've been going for nearly 50 minutes.
Mm.
So, that's been pretty good. So, I'm Emma.
I'm Isaac.
I'm Jaden.
And you've been listening to This World Ain't Right, aka TWAR.